One time after the Buddha had established his dispensation, had been teaching for some time, he took a period of time to be on retreat, and the only person who was allowed to see him was Ananda. And after the Buddha had been on retreat for a period of time, then Ananda asked him the question, and people are wondering what the Buddha, the Tathagata, is doing while he's on retreat, and just wanted to ask this question. And the Buddha said, well, you can tell them I'm watching my breath. So the Buddha, even after his own enlightenment, his own teaching, and when it came time for him to have a break, what he would do would be to do mindfulness of breathing. So that this mindfulness of breathing is a skill and a practice, a training that we can spend a lot of time working on and cultivating, developing. And whether we're still fairly neophytes and new to the practice, or we've been practicing for a long time, mindfulness of breathing is a suitable format for cultivating our practice. As we attend to the breath, then there's certain, besides the exercise in cultivation of mindfulness, there's just an opportunity to tap into and realize, recognize the universal nature of all beings. Really, this is a characteristic of a living being, is that they breathe. So that when we attend to the breath, we start to attend to that kind of common nature. And actually, say, like in the precepts, when we say, I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature, in the Pali, it's panatipata, so that pana is breath, a being that breathes. So that just by doing something so simple, but it has this wide ramification of actually tuning into this universal nature, or just the universal nature of arising and ceasing, the breath coming into rising and falling. It's just expansion and contraction. These are on the breath level where we're watching that expansion and contraction of the body. But that's the nature of all phenomena, material or mental. It's just this expansion and contraction, rising and falling. Or even, it's an idiom in the discourses of expansion and contraction of world systems, of universes, and looking out on things in terms of time on a cosmological level. It's that expansion and contraction of a universe. It's the same pattern. So as we tune into the breath, we're starting to tune into things on a very fundamental level. When the Buddha was when he was still not the Buddha, when he was, because the Buddha is the name given to him after his enlightenment, but so that when he was still unenlightened, still striving, still practicing, and had done all the extreme practices that are kind of mandated, really, in Indian religious tradition. If you're not doing something to some sort of extreme, then it's sort of like wimpy spiritual practitioner. It's not going to get anywhere. You've got to be do something really spectacular. And of course, the Buddha had really thrown himself into these all the different practices, and he was, he really felt he wasn't getting anywhere. And it was the recollection of when he was a young boy and sitting quietly under a rose apple tree and tuning into the breath that gave him this insight that there needs to be a middle way, and of course we recited the Dhammacakka Sutta, and that's how the Buddha begins that discourse, that there is this this middle way. There's the two extremes are not the way. The extreme of seeking pleasure, the extreme of self-abnegation. These don't work. But this middle way and predicated on the memory of the peace and well-being that he experienced in attending to the breath when he was a young boy gave him an insight into the nature of path to liberation. So that the tuning into the breath, tuning into this rhythm that is innate to us. We don't actually have to learn how to breathe. We don't have to carry the breathing toolkit with us to wherever we go in a meditation retreat or whatever. It's not like taking all our cushions with us. You can we go anywhere, we take our breath. Also, one of the things that the Buddha, some of the insights that the Buddha had, was that mindfulness of breathing, that kind of balance that he experienced, was there was a happiness and well-being there. And then what came to his mind was, why am I afraid of that happiness and well-being? Perhaps this could be the way. Kind of a confirmation within his sort of internal investigative process. This is the way. This happiness is completely wholesome. So that the happiness and well-being that comes from mindfulness and a settled attention on the breath is a well-being that is to be cultivated. So that the mindfulness of breathing is not to be a way of forcing and pushing of or an extreme in some way of indulging in trying to squeeze out whatever bit of pleasure there is in the experience, but it's a natural ease and well-being that we can attend to and allow to arise. So that and it's quite natural that when the mind is attentive and able to sustain its focus, that there will be a quality of well-being. It's very natural. So that as we practice and as we meditate, taking the breath as the meditation object, using the structure that the Buddha gives in mindfulness of breathing, which is it's kind of a shorthand. But it's important to bring it to mind so that the mindfully attending to the breath as one breathes in long, breathing in a long breath, one knows one breathes in a long breath. Breathing out a long breath, one knows I'm breathing out a long breath. Breathing in short, one knows that one is breathing in short. Breathing out short, one knows one's breathing out short. And just to be able to take note of the length of the breath, and then also how it affects the body. There isn't a there isn't a prescribed breath that is the gold standard for a Buddhist meditator. That recognition of when one's breathing in long, when one's breathing in short. Watches a person while they're sleeping, or watching like a little child when they sleep. See that their breath isn't. There's short breaths, there's long breaths, and there's a natural rhythm. There's a natural modulating of the breath that isn't forced, isn't contrived, and that is the. As a meditator, that's what we're stepping back and attending to that process, being alert and attentive, because sometimes, and the main thing is that we're letting the breath follow its own rhythm. And there's no real need to read into that maybe it's long breaths are better than short breaths. But in reality, there's the breath comes and goes. Sometimes when the mind is very peaceful and we're not contriving anything, sometimes that rhythm of the breath becomes it's very long. It breathes in deeply, there's the rising of the body, there's a long out-breath. And as we relax and just soften around the body, soften around any kind of holding or expectation that we have, just really letting the body breathe on its own. There'd be this long breath, there's a gap, and the breath goes out. But also, sometimes when we're not contriving anything, the mind is very peaceful and alert. Sometimes the breath is very short. It's almost as if the body is just doesn't need the same kind of breathing and filling itself with the breath. As just a short in breath and the body is at ease and it seems full. And then the breath going out, it's just almost like a wisp of a breath going out. It's interesting to watch how the breath changes. Because sometimes, say if we're excited in some way, either through either through maybe aversion or worry or something really sort of pleasantly exciting, the breath can oftentimes be short. And there can be an agitation there, but it isn't necessarily the case. Learning how to step back from the judging, assessing, expecting, and then tuning into breathing in long, one knows one breathes in long, breathing out long, one knows one breathes out long, breathing in short, one knows one breathes in short, breathing out short, one knows one breathes out short. Just knowing that much, keeping it on a very fundamental and basic level. And as we tune into the breath, then allowing the mind to settle into the rhythm of the breath and how we experience the breath. Another step or instruction that the Buddha gives with breath meditation is breathing in, one experiences the entire body. Breathing out, one experiences the entire body. And so that taking that rhythm of the breath and then applying the mindfulness and awareness that one is accumulating, and then paying attention to the physical sensation of the body. In the Pali, it's a sambhagaya, which is the entire body, the whole body, all the body. So that we can be using our both awareness and our investigation to see how we we do experience the connection between the breath and the body. We can be the last instruction that the Buddha gives is calming the breath body, the Gaya Sankhara. This is many different interpretations of this, but the breath body is probably the most common translation. But the focus is on calming the breath body. I breathe in, calming the breath body. I breathe out. And one can take that as both the physical body as well as the sensation of the breath itself. And of course, if one's calming just the breath itself, it'll have its effect on the physical body. So the interrelated nature of the breath, the body, and the awareness, these all work together. When we use the word experiencing the whole body I breathe in, experiencing the whole body I breathe out, I think it's a good translation, because sometimes what we do in meditation is. And we use idioms, and even I'll use it just out of default, or maybe not thinking it through clearly. But we use the idiom of, say, like watching the breath, watching the breath, and watching the breath as the meditation object. And what that tends to do, subtly, is to separate oneself, in the sense of there's me, the watcher, and then this is what I'm watching. And there can tend to be a separation there. But the word that the Buddha uses is more experiencing. Pati samveti, because veti is like the root is in feeling, and both pati and sangha sort of have a sense of fully feeling the body I breathe in, fully feeling the whole body I breathe out. So this sense of experiencing, really being present for the experience, not separating oneself in some way. And particularly for the mind to really settle and to become more subtle and still, one does have to inhabit the experience. One has to allow the mind to move into that experience rather than holding oneself back and kind of just watching from a nice, safe distance. And for the mind to really settle and become still, there can't be separation. So as we take the breath as our meditation, allowing the awareness and the breath to work together, to be a part of the experience, that breathing in, breathing out, and then attending to how it's felt within the body, particularly when I've always found it extremely useful to be tuned into the body getting swept up by dullness because sometimes it's so easy for the mind to get a bit vague and drifty, and then it goes into dullness, goes into drowsiness, it drifts off into sleep. So that attentiveness to the body helps one to, say, define the get some definition and clarity within the mind as one is following that simple rhythm of the breath, exploring how it feels within the whole body. And then, of course, the other aspect of that is that calming the breath body, and calming the body at the same time. So this sense of calming, relaxing, soothing. There is a as the Buddha's memory of himself practicing under the rose apple tree. There is a pleasant quality of well-being and happiness that can be an integral part to the practice, and it's actually very very important piece of how the mind continues to be able to settle and clarify. And the Buddha states it very straight. I mean, just is a the happy mind is easily concentrated. Just is for him, it just sounds like a statement of fact that when the mind is, if we're worrying, if we're agitated, if we're kind of dull, if we're so that happy mind is easily concentrated. So that paying attention to what brings a sense of ease. Of course, the qualifier within meditation practice is, say, the ease is grounded in, supported by clarity and awareness. This is a fundamental quality that we need to be attending to. But using the breath as the vehicle to be able to explore the ways that one can sustain our attention and awareness and allow that attention and awareness to grow more clear. So the body is an important element of how to ground awareness skillfully. As we take the breath and develop it, we can start to when the body is at ease, there's a certain relaxation, and also it's the body and the mind are energized, so that there's a sense of alertness and ease within the body, within the mind. Then that attending to the breath body, how we experience just the breath on its own. Tuning into the experience of the sensation of the breath, and we can take it just at the tip of the nose or at the abdomen or wherever that felt sense of the contact of the breath is, but then to start to move into that sensation, that experience, and calming the just the breath body as we experience it. One of the things that's important to caution, give a cautionary note on, is that It doesn't need to, when we speak of the breath body, sometimes it's helpful, because sometimes I speak for myself anyway, they take it literally. And then there's trying to breathe in an anatomically correct manner. So that we visualize the body, or we say, but this is just dropping the expectations and conceptions of how we're conceiving, and just how do we experience the breath? What's the sensation like? And it doesn't really matter whether it's sort of anatomically correctly conceived. That's what we experience. And so whether it's, because sometimes we think, oh, where's the breath? It should be at the tip of the nose. Where's my nose? Mm-hmm. And we go into this whole sort of conceptualizing, and it becomes a very rational exercise. But one has to allow the mind to go to the experiential. And how do we experience the breath? What is its shape? What is its tone? What is its feeling? What does it kind of look like in the mind? And that's more the breath body. And then to allow attention to explore and experience, going into that experience of the sensation of the breath, the kaya sankhara, that calming of it is not so much trying to force it to be subtle or still or stable, but calming it more in the sense of allowing the breath to be surrounded, or to the experience to be surrounded by a quality of calmness and well-being. It's underlying well-being and ease, and then the breath will calm on its own. So this sense of that kind of ease and well, not forcing, not pushing, not drifting, because sometimes when we start to things start to be easeful and pleasant, we tend, especially when it's the rhythm is breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, ease, calm. Start really drifting off. So then there needs to be within that there needs to be the alertness, mindfulness, attention needs to be sustained. So these are, it's really interesting to try to get that balance, and to be able to explore what is the experience, how do we sustain this experience, that's enough to keep us occupied for a few lifetimes even. So taking the breath, taking the meditation, and developing that foundation of awareness. And of course, as I mentioned yesterday, or whenever, that the grounding our experience in this quality of that, how the Thai Forest Masters emphasize this sense of being the one who knows, coming back to that quality of awareness, of knowing, not so much as me knowing this, but resting in the quality of clarity and awareness. There's a teacher in Thailand. Well, he's passed away now. He's another disciple of Ajahn Mun, Ajahn Ted, and very well known. And the maybe one of the things to point out as before I tell the story, because there's in his instruction, he kind of points to a drawback of a strong concentration, and for him, his own in his own biography and his own life story, it was easy for him to meditate and gain very strong concentration. And when he had very refined experiences of mind, and he mistook the subtle states of mind and meditative experience, concentration, as the experience of Nibbana, and he said from the sort of the highest stages of concentration that he had realized, then he had assumed that to be the goal, and it was 19 years of that assumption until sometime later in his practice, and with some encouragement through Ajahn Mun, that he was able to see the wrong assumption and then move through to realization. So that in the little story I tell, he's actually, it's coming from his experience, and sometimes the admonition, say, not to worry too much about concentration is I think for most of us is not really a problem. It's like just trying to keep the mind like a few breaths in a row and would be kind of nice, you know. Anyway, there's a Western student of his had been gone back to the West and been away for several years, and then he came back to Thailand and visited and paid respects to him, and in talking about his practice lamenting the fact that, and saying, you know, it really takes a long time to learn in this. Ajahn Tet sort of said, he was kind of silent for a minute, and then he said, well, I'll teach you the fundamentals. And he uses it's kind of idiomatic to himself, but it kind of illustrates a principle that we've mentioned. But he said that to look on the experience in this way, that the heart is that which is central or is neutral or is even. It's kind of hard to translate. Because if you just say neutral, then it's like it isn't anything. But it's neutral in the sense that it's the ground of being. And he said, and that's what you call in Thai. He says this is the jai. This is the heart, and it's the It's the ground of awareness. There's the heart. And in the mind, the citta is that which moves out. And as soon as it moves from that base of the heart, then it starts to branch out endlessly. So take the, allow the attention to rest in the heart, and let the mind, let the heart stay in its place of neutrality or evenness or what is central. And then the student asked, where should the mind dwell? What should I put the mind on? And Ajahn Tate's response was, the mind dwelling anywhere is clinging. The mind dwelling in some place is clinging. As soon as the mind moves to something, that in itself is the clinging. That in itself is the movement. That in itself is the process of becoming. So that he said, and it's his admonition of, don't let the mind go to concentration. Don't let the mind get caught in its objects. Come back to that foundation of the heart. So this is. As we take this mindfulness of breathing, obviously we have to, we do use an object, but you can't take it too seriously in the sense of you have to recognize that you're training the mind, and that training is for giving a window on the possibility that underlying our experience is this quality of awareness and knowing. And to be reflecting and investigating how this works, using the breath as a means for training awareness, training attention, and delighting in the quality of ease and clarity that comes, and letting the body relax, letting the mind relax, but reflecting on that function of the fundamental heart, that ground of a being, the ground of awareness. That is there. So this practice does take time, and we have to learn how to investigate skillfully, but to delight in the process and take an interest in that process of how to relearn how to breathe. So offer that for reflection.